So while I'm speaking, there are going to be some pictures. The slideshow is already showing at the beginning before church, if you were here for the prelude. I'm not going to specifically address the pictures. They're meant more to give you an idea of what Burning Man looks like. They're not really pertinent to what I'm speaking about, but kind of helps you to understand a little bit if you can just get a mental picture. Every year in late summer, a city springs up on a dry lake bed in the Nevada desert. For a week, more than 60,000 people from all over the world gather there. Everyone is welcome. They are artists and accountants, mystics and humanists, party kids and elders, poets and dropouts, the lost and the found. Together, they create an intentional community. That is, like all communities, more than the sum of its parts. And also, like all communities, has its share of struggles and conflicts. At the center of the city, there is a giant wooden statue of a man. And at the end of the week, the man is burned in a huge party with fireworks, dancers, and music. Then everyone packs up and leaves, and there is no trace of what happened. Because the burning of the giant wooden man is the main event, the whole thing is called Burning Man. It's organized around 10 principles that provide structure to the event and encourage everyone to really take part in a way that is meaningful and authentic for them. It's not a rock concert or a festival. It is an exercise in co-creating a rich, shared experience in a very desolate place. There aren't bystanders. The principles include radical self-expression, participation, communal effort, civic responsibility, leaving no trace, radical inclusion, radical self-reliance, immediacy, and decommodification. I wish I had time to talk about all of them, but I don't. So I'm going to focus on the 10th principle, which is gifting. First, I'm going to back up, though, and explain my connection to Burning Man. I first heard about Burning Man around 16 or so years ago, probably actually at the same time I started attending Beacon, when I was watching a travel show on TV. It looked wild and kind of exciting, but the part that stuck out for me when I was first exposed was that everyone there was camping in a very hot, very dry, very dusty desert, surrounded by people and noise, with no running water and no flush toilets. This didn't look like something that I would want to do. But time has a way of changing you. I learned more. I met people who had been there. I took some other risks in my life. And I realized that Burning Man would be a chance to really step outside of my comfort zone and learn a lot. So last year, when the chance came for me to attend, I decided to go for it. I set out on my journey late last August. My friend Jeff and I loaded up my minivan and made the drive over the course of about 3 days. When we finally got to the main gate, some people greeted me, hugged me, and said, "Welcome home." and then I participated in the traditional welcoming ritual of rolling around on the dusty ground and banging a gong. I'd seen YouTube videos. It looked like a lot of fun. It was terrible. I felt awful. I hadn't even started, and I was so far outside of my comfort zone already. Wow. Luckily, there was a lot to see and do. There's no way to see the whole thing. And so I had some distractions to keep my mind off of things. Everyone at Burning Man, or most people, get around by bicycle. And I rode my bike all over the city during the day and at night to see the massive works of art. I hugged strangers and had profound conversation while waiting in line. I rode in an art car, which is a vehicle that has been converted into a moving piece of art. In my case, it was this big, like, light-up pair of lips on top of a golf cart with a couch in the back. It was pretty cool. We raced other art cars across the desert and toured the more confined inner rings of the city. For a week, I danced and sang and listened to music. I read deeply moving letters that people left on walls and was moved to tears. I prepared shared meals in our camp kitchen. I jumped on trampolines and swung on giant swing sets and drank the best cup of coffee ever after first grinding the beans by hand for the next person. I ate warm bread fresh from a wood-fired bread oven topped by homemade jam. And all of this was free. It was all a gift. But the discomfort was always there. It was incredibly hot. The afternoons were just miserable. I would find a place in the shade and try not to move for hours. At night, it's ridiculously dark and cold. It's cold in the desert at night. Most of the city was crowded and noisy, and it smelled awful. And the dust. Everything was covered in dust. It felt like especially me. And the dust storms only made things worse. My sleep was disrupted several times every night by generators turning on and off and people having loud conversations and art cars driving by banging music. Sometimes I got lost because people stole the street signs that serve as guideposts in the city. In those low points, when I was tired and miserable and hot, the smallest acts of kindness meant the most. And that brings me back to gifting. I'm going to tell a story. On the night after the wooden man was burned, I decided to really explore the city. I was up far later than I had been awake voluntarily for decades. It's probably 3 a.m. And I was craving something sweet. The thought passed through my head, and about 3 minutes later, 2 women waved at me. They were with a man who was wearing a big banana costume, as one does. The women explained that they were from Arizona and they had just met the man who was from Israel, and then asked if I would like some candy. Yeah. They pulled out a plastic yellow case in the shape of a banana, opened it, and put these banana candies in my face. And then they kept saying, "Take more." In that moment, there wasn't a better gift I could have received. I thought about it. If I were walking down the street here in New Westminster, and I came across a man in a banana costume offering me banana candies for no particular reason, I probably wouldn't take them. I wouldn't trust him. In the same way, I can't imagine taking candy and walking out and giving it to strangers because I think they wouldn't trust me. In our daily lives, giving and receiving gifts is something that we frequently find uncomfortable. Why is this? I think that when you're genuinely giving someone something, the first problem you encounter, or at least I encounter, is knowing what to give. There's the kind of mundane, oh, this person has everything already, what am I going to give them for Christmas? But there's also much more difficult situations where someone is experiencing pain and loss in their lives, and you're not sure what will make things better and what will make things worse. So sometimes it's easier just to not give. But even if you do know what to give someone, there's another level. You're not just giving the gift. You're really asking the other person to accept something from you, to accept feelings from you. And they might not. You're risking rejection. Nobody likes rejection. The other side of the equation, receiving a gift, is no easier. In fact, I think it can be more difficult. Anything that is given to you could also be taken away. Sometimes in my best moments, I am my most afraid because of this. What if these good things go away and I don't have them anymore? I'll feel more sad than if I'd gotten them in the first place. Also, we live in a culture that values independence above all else. When you accept a gift, you may feel indebted. You may even feel that you're taking on a debt so big you can't repay it. This is most difficult when you most need a gift. Depending on another person for a gift, for an act of care, for anything at all, can feel like weakness. I don't like to feel weak. And there's something else. Accepting care from another person requires you to trust not only that another person is genuine in their offer, but that you yourself are worthy of the gift. That you are a person who is worth someone else's time, energy, and emotions. That's something a lot of us struggle with, or at least I know I do. And so here at home, when I'm offering or receiving a gift, there's a lot going on under the surface. I'm going to share another story. My friend Jeff attended Burning Man twice before he went with me. So I was the beneficiary of all of his hard-won lessons. He was able to tell me what to bring and how to set things up, and it was very helpful. But I didn't feel like I was really doing it on my own. During Jeff's first trip to Burning Man, he found himself in a difficult spot, which is how he learned a lot of these lessons about what to do, right? When he was in a really tight position, he met a woman named Christy, and she dropped everything to help him when he really needed it. So when we were at Burning Man, he was trying to find her. She had told him where the camp was, but she told him the wrong place, and nobody else seemed to know. We spent a week looking for her, and no luck. Then, during our final hours at Burning Man, on our last trip back to camp, fate intervened. Most of the city was empty, although street signs had been stolen, and we were worried about getting lost. So we decided to take a super extra long way back because we knew we would be okay. We would find our camp. And about a half a block from our camp, Christy. She was there. Jeff introduced me, and Christy asked how my first Burning Man had gone. I confessed that I was feeling a little embarrassed because I had been relying so much on my friend. I hadn't really done it on my own and embraced the principle of radical self-reliance. Christy looked at me and said, "You're looking at this the wrong way." His advice and experience is his gift to you. He's giving it freely. When you accept it and you have a better time, that is your gift to him. Wow. I had spent a whole week at Burning Man denying myself and my friend the gift of friendship and connection because I wanted to be strong. I wanted to be independent. I wanted to prove myself and my worth by not accepting help. I was missing the point. Accepting a gift isn't necessarily a sign that you need something. Even when you can meet your own needs, you can still accept that someone else cares about you. You have a choice. You can choose to turn your back on it, or you can choose to return that care by taking a risk, opening your heart, and acknowledging it. In the process, everyone receives the gift of connection. It is not weakness. It is perhaps the bravest thing you can do. This was a huge lesson for me. I've often felt that accepting a gift is selfish. It's not. Accepting a gift is also a gift. And maybe even a more important gift. The giving tree in the children's story isn't just a self-sacrificing martyr who lets the boy destroy her. She is happy. She is happy because she enjoys making the boy happy. His happiness is the best gift he could give her. Genuinely giving and receiving gifts builds connection. It builds community. It ripples out and builds on itself. And everyone is better for it. That's what I learned at Burning Man. When people connect and share, the result is abundance. The abundance is everywhere, all around us, if we are willing to accept it. Even in a very hot, very dry, very dusty desert. Thank you. We will be